Poll question is up. Inspired by NASCAR driver Ty Dillon, going to join the show a little bit later on. Driver of the number 13 Chevy. He's in the movie Stuber. So we asked the question, would you rather spend an entire day with your favorite athlete or cameo in a movie with your favorite actor or actress? Let us know. You can go vote at thefanrichmond.com. And the phone number is 345-0910. We'll dive back into the NFL. We'll go all around the NFL. Ryan Wilson of CBSSports.com. He will join us coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Want to remind you, college football enters week 3. And Virginia Tech, Furman, you can hear it right here starting at 10:30 on Saturday morning with yours truly, Wes McElroy. I'll be joined by Luther Matty, former All-ACC defensive lineman from the Hokies, Mike Burnup, and John Lazor will have the call just past noon. That is Saturday. And we are ready to go with the voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies. That would be Mr. John Lazor. Hey, long time no talk. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm good. I'm curious, as you rolled out of Lane Stadium, I know a win is a win, but as you rolled out of Lane Stadium last Saturday, how'd you feel about this team?
Yeah, there were some mixed reactions, to be certain, and I think the way I was feeling was the way that the fan base was feeling, but probably more importantly, the way that the players and the coaches were feeling as well, because you certainly did some good things in the football game. For the most part, you took care of the football. I know that went off the rails at the end of the game when you put it on the turf a couple of times when you had an opportunity to ice the game, but you were able to get more vertical. That was certainly a positive. You were able to find some receivers down the field. But I think you walked away with a level of dissatisfaction when it pertains to the running game and just not being able to get much going, particularly between the tackles. And you didn't see Keyshawn King in the second half for those ball security reasons. And without a couple of runs for Deshaun McLeish, really your run game got stuffed. So that was disheartening, particularly against the defensive front in Old Dominion. That's quite a bit down in terms of where they were last year, and also as you play down to that level. So certainly a lot of question marks as it pertains to that. And then there was some defensive deficiencies in the second half too, in terms of tackling too high and not taking advantage of excellent calls on the blitz and pressure packages that you were putting in. So it was an uneven performance. That was a win. That's the most important thing. So I left feeling relieved in that sense, but certainly not satisfied. And I think that, again, is pretty much anybody that's affiliated with Virginia Tech in any way right now.
Let me stay with the run here, because if you ask Justin Fuente what's not happening on the run, I mean, he'll go across the board. O-lineman, running back, quarterback, wide receivers. And I guess in a way it is D, all the above. What are you not seeing on the run game?
The biggest thing is you're not seeing the push in the middle of the offensive line. And some of that is explainable in the fact that you've had some injuries and you got young there, as Justin Fuente said, very quickly. But at the same time, even these young players should have a physical advantage against some of the guys they're lining up against. And whether that's communication or whether it's their execution of it, you're just not getting that push. So you like to put some of it on the running backs too, and you do in terms of ball security. But at the same time, when they're getting the football and they already have a hand on them, or there's a guy right in their face, there's not a lot that you can ask them to do. So I think for me, if I had to name the biggest thing that is causing it at the moment, it's the lack of push from the line.
And it's a complex situation, because I know, especially after last year, nobody wants to hear about inexperience or youth, but they did play, they started that game with two true freshmen on the line, and then they were working other guys in towards the end because guys were bumped and bruised. So as Fuente likes to say, they got young real quick up front.
They did, yeah. You know, you were without Zachariah Hoyt, and you wound up being without T.J. Jackson, so your center and your right guard, but you started guys that you're very excited about, John Harris, and also alongside him, Doug Nestor. I think you felt pretty good about the way Nestor acclimated and the way that he played. There were certainly on film some instances where maybe that wasn't the case, but you liked that. But yeah, absolutely, when your most experienced player is a sophomore on the line, you're going to have some of that. When you've got two guys making their first start, you're going to have a little bit more of that. But what people don't want to hear is any of those excuses, and that's not what Justin Fuente and Brad Cornelison were offering after the football game, or Vance Weiss for that matter. They said, we get it. It's not good enough. That's a fact, I think, is the exact way that Justin Fuente said it. This is another opportunity this Saturday against an undersized Furman defensive front where you should be able to initiate that push, and you should have a physical mismatch up front. And as we were discussing earlier on Hokie Pod, Wes, and Mike and I will talk about in the pregame on Saturday. Very optimistic that you'll be able to take advantage of that and gain some confidence in that area this Saturday. But if you don't, obviously that level of concern is going to rise exponentially.
It's John Lazor. He's the voice of Virginia Tech. He's brought to you by Cowan Gates, there for you in any case. What is and how much is missing without having Damon Hazelton in there?
It changes everything, really. It does. It changes the way the defenses are able to match you in terms of their personnel and in their secondary. And you still had some tremendous receivers on the field, and you're still able to be productive, very productive, in fact, through the passing game. But it hasn't become the pick-your-poison type situation you want to put defenses in because of Damon's absence, because he's the unicorn on the roster. He's really the one big-bodied physical threat that you have that can play outside. And it forces you to change what you're doing with Trey Turner and Hezekiah Grimsley. Whereas if you had Hazelton, you could put Trey Turner in the slot to the same side and really overload that side and make it difficult. Or you put him on the other side and stretch the defense both laterally and vertically, because then you can use double slot with Hezekiah and Tavion. Now you're just essentially that down, and that's allowing defenses to key on Trey Turner quite a bit more. We saw him doubled basically the entire game against Boston College, and heavy focus on him throughout the Old Dominion game as well. And if Damon doesn't go this week, or if you decide to hold him out another week to give him the bye and a couple more weeks to heal up before Duke, you'll continue to see that. The good thing is that you've continued to see the emergence of Hezekiah Grimsley and some of the other guys in that receiving core because of the tension that's been focused on Trey. But you can only imagine what happens when you put Hazelton out there with Turner. And then I also think it opens up the tight ends quite a bit more, because right now you're being able to use some of those bigger bodies in the secondary to match tight ends, whereas you'd have to expend them on Hazelton if he was there.
Let me flip it over to the questions about defense, where you brought up a great point, and I'm sorry, I can't remember if it was late in the fourth quarter or if it was in the post game, where you said last year this team was plagued by not being in the right spot or being pushed out of the right spot. Saturday, I don't know how many times they were in the right spot. They failed to execute, or they were overly aggressive, or they overly pursued, but they were there in position. They just didn't get the job done countless times.
Bud called a great game. He really did. And in terms of snuffing out their speed sweep and their perimeter-based run game, which they had some success on their first series, that was non-existent. Old Dominion had no answers offensively in the second quarter, and really for the second half of the first quarter, held to 70 yards in that first half. And it started to carry over into the second half because Bud was getting more creative. He brought members of the secondary quite a few times. He was able to pinch the pocket with his linebackers quite a bit. Rayshard Ashby played very well once again in that game, and you really had all the right things dialed up in a position where you could hurt them quite dramatically with some TFLs and some sacks. You had 5 sacks in the game, but honestly, you could have been in the double digits because they were living in the backfield. Some of that is a credit to Stone Smart and his escapability through the front of that collapsing pocket, but at the same time, you'd like to think that you would have somebody there. So the Hokies were in the right spots. They didn't tackle well. Many times they tried to tackle too high, lost Smart in most cases, but also Keyshawn Strong, the running back, and Lala Davis a couple of times. So, yeah, you feel great about your scheme. You feel great about the way you executed that scheme, but unfortunately, you can't say you feel great about your execution level in tackling. Bud Foster told me it was sloppy, and I think he said as much to Mike Burnup on the air as well, too. So that's an area to clean up, but the bright spot is that, yeah, this team, in terms of where they are scheming and their knowledge of what they're attempting to do, is at a much higher level than last year.
To paraphrase what you just said, you got to see a run game this Saturday. What do you got to see from the defense?
Well, again, it's an intricate challenge this week against Furman, because this is a team that you just see FCS and you see SoCon and you say we should bulldoze. And that's still right. Don't get me wrong. You want to see this defense dominate. But I think you are going to give up at least some yardage, if not points, in terms of Furman getting on the board. They've scored 44 points per game, and they were right there having scored 42 against Georgia State, a team that went into Neyland a couple weeks ago and beat Tennessee. So, you know, you're facing a triple option attack that also has the ability to throw the ball over your head. So it's one of those, like it was with Georgia Tech, where maybe some of the things that you were working on and your pressures and your execution, you put on the back burner and tried to focus on some of those different things. So I think the one thing you need to see from the defense, which you always need to see against the triple option, is gap integrity and tackling at the spot. Because if you don't, you're going to give up some big plays on misdirection. So this team continues to need to be in the right spots. That's doubly important against the triple option. And you also have to be sound in your technique on the back end, because Darren Granger, their their quarterback will throw the football. So to boil it down simply, you need to hit people early, often, and hard.
That was my follow-up question, because we brought Granger. Like, I'm trying to read about him and study up about him, and he seems like quite a talent. It seems like one of those guys you wonder how exactly he ended up there. But so do they run out of the triple option all the time, or is it something that they will fold back into?
They run most of their sets out of the triple option. They'll align in the triple option. They will run some pro set. It's a multiple offense, but for more often than not, they don't call them A-backs, B-back like Georgia Tech does. They call them tailbacks and running back. But the tailbacks are essentially wingbacks, and they line up and look a lot like fans will remember Georgia Tech looking for so many years under Paul Johnson. The difference is that they will shift out of it quite a bit more and shift into opportunities to throw the football. And we saw that last week against Georgia State, where Granger was able to throw for four touchdowns and really was almost spotless through the air. And he can also run it as well. And I'll tell you exactly how he wound up there when he was a sophomore going into his junior year. Unfortunately, it was in a car accident in Conway, South Carolina, where he's from, and that forced him out of action for his entire junior year. He was a receiver, actually, on the Conway football team when he got injured in that car crash. They made him a quarterback after he'd missed the recruiting cycle and was obviously very raw in his only year of being a quarterback in high school. So that's how he wound up at Furman. But make no mistake, he certainly has the talent level to play in the Power Five.
Good, you doing research, watching film. He's all ready for Saturday, folks. It'll start with coverage at 10:30 across the network right here on Sports Radio 910 The Fan and 105.1 FM. John Lazor, Mike Burnup, Luther Matty, and yours truly. Before I let you run, I got a poll question out here. Ty Dillon, the NASCAR driver, is going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes. He landed a cameo in the movie Stuber. So we're asking, Would you rather have a cameo in a movie with your favorite actor or spend an entire day with your favorite athlete?
I'd rather have a cameo in the movie. That'll be lasting, and you can go back and look at that for years to come.
Who's the actor or actress?
Oh, man, James Spader would be one of them that I'd love to do some scenes with, and Christopher Walken would be the other.
You and Walken. I think we could
sarcastic it up a little bit.
I would pay $16 a ticket to go see you and Walken in a scene together. I will see you in Blacksburg this weekend, my friend.
See you, buddy.
You got it. It's John Lazor, the voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies, brought to you by Cowan Gates. There for you in any case. And honestly, there's a lot to talk about here, but I think the case of the situation, and you could kind of see this coming, especially after the loss to Boston College, and then last week against Old Dominion. I don't think Lays hit the nail on the head. Nobody was satisfied after seeing that. It was, okay, W, at least last year didn't happen again, but I don't think anybody was satisfied. I think there were bright spots. I think there's alarming the turnovers, the inability to run the ball. But now the setup is you go out, you beat Furman on Saturday. I don't think it's going to make anybody feel better about the current situation. There are ways to make people feel worse about the current situation, but they're going to get a bye week after this, and then second ACC game against Duke on a Friday night. They're going to still have the same questions going into that game. You can always jump in the conversation, 345-0910, 345-0910. Wes McElroy on the news, Sports Radio 910, The Fan, and 105.1 FM.